Good evening, I'm Christian Esguerra, and welcome to this episode of After the Fact, where we get to see things more clearly, where we get a better sense of the truth. Let's begin by dissecting the news. The latest PulseHS survey showed a wide margin between former Senator Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and the rest of the other candidates in the 2022 presidential election. His lead nationwide was more than double the number garnered by Vice President Len Robredo, who placed second in the December 1-5 survey. Now, while Marcos Jr. supporters are celebrating this current standing, other contenders are not raising the white flag, the argument being the most accurate survey is the one on election day. Tonight, we'll try to make sense of this latest PulseHS survey. We'll also discuss the function of surveys, both for candidates and, more importantly, for voters. Be part of our discussion. Send us your questions and comments on our YouTube live chat or tweet us using the hashtag ANCAfterTheFact. Joining us tonight is Dr. Jose Ramon Albert. He's a senior research fellow at the government think tank Philippine Institute for Development Studies. Good evening, sir, and thank you for joining us on the program.
Good evening.
I'd like to start with this article that you wrote at the East-West Forum, wherein you said that there was no clear frontrunner yet as far as the presidential contenders were concerned. Now, of course, this article was written before the PulseHS survey, which was conducted from December 1 to 5, was released. I'd like to know first, why was that your thesis statement in that particular article?
Whatever surveys, even reputable ones, they're very dynamic. They can go up and down, up and down. So you really need to see first the trends. No? But of course, right now it's pretty clear that there's a very big margin for former Senator Bongbong Marcos, and it seems like on one level, if elections were held today, that would suggest that it's pretty clear he'd win. But you know, there's still several months up to usually. I've been analyzing all of these very reputable surveys, and the results always tend to stabilize a month before the elections itself. So I would put my hunch on the accuracy of forecasting based on whatever comes a month before. Right now, there's still, you know, a number of things that could change the dynamics.
Okay. In the first place, how should we look then at surveys that are released based on surveys or field work conducted at a specific period in time? In this case, December 1 to 5.
Yeah, well, we have to understand that surveys are trying to get a snapshot of the public pulse. So, of course, assuming that the survey is designed well, and by designed well, I mean the respondents were randomly selected to represent the entire country, because there are also other surveys that are not quite reputable or I would say representative of the voting population. For instance, if you have internet polls or text polls, they will not necessarily reflect the voter sentiment. They will only reflect the ones who actually participated in the survey. Surveys are supposed to be done for purposes of collecting information about entities of entities, whether persons, in this case for election purposes, voters, or you know, you could think of even establishments. You know, if you're trying to get information to get a descriptor of the attributes of a larger group of entities of which the sample respondents are a part of. Now, so that's why it's important that the survey is designed and implemented well. No, we have quite a number of polling outfits that all, you know, that have sprung up, and sometimes they only come during the election period, but there are also a few reputable institutions that I would probably, you know, examine a lot more than others.
Okay. Let's talk about those two major points that you mentioned: the selection of the sample size or the sample or the respondents, and number two, the proper conduct of the survey itself. First, let's talk about why it's important to have a random selection of respondents. And does it mean that if a survey has a purposive sampling, that could also affect, let's say, the credibility of the results.
The thing is, whenever you're trying to get a big population, you know, what you need to do is randomly select so that eventually you will be able to estimate what is the probability because it's possible that you could design your survey in such a way that it's a little bit more complex. That, you know, for instance, now the way things are done by even statistics offices, government offices that collect data, they typically will put the country into like barangays. No, they select only randomly barangays, and then from within the barangays, they may select households to randomly once again two stages. So that's pretty much the same way by which all of these polling outfits tend to select the respondents. They will think of the voting precincts as the areas more or less where people will go, and so they try to find the voters that are more or less concentrated around those areas. So okay. it's important that, yeah, sure.
So it means that if you select these barangays, for instance, the respondents there will have an equal chance of being selected to be part of that survey.
Absolutely. So that's the whole point of making sure that you have probability samples. You are trying to make the whether the entities, whether the barangays first, and then later the actual respondents in the barangays to have equal representation. So that way you can more or less calculate, because it's possible that the different barangays will have different populations. So that's why they're all they're weighted properly, so that it will really reflect the entire country.
Yeah, because I think this is a very important portion in the discussion to answer the basic question often raised whenever surveys come out. How come you have a survey with, let's say, 1,200, 1,800, or even 6,000 respondents? How could that represent a population of 110 million Filipinos?
Yeah, well, right. The thing is, that's something you learn in your introduction to statistics course. If you go to college or even now, senior high school, even in senior high school, there's a statistics course. We actually teach that if you're trying to estimate a percentage in an entire population, all you need is 1,200 to get a margin of error. Actually, you can compute it 1/√ of the sample size. Pretty much you should be able to get the margin of error around that. So if I take 1,600 samples, sample respondents, take 1/√ of 1,600, you're going to get around 3 percentage points as what's known as the margin of error. Meaning to say, I may be accurate within 3 percentage points.
Mm-hmm. So in short, you don't need to survey each and every Filipino. You just need to get a very credible sample based on random selection of the respondents.
Right. You need to just make sure that your samples are representing the entire population. That's the whole idea. Now, the only problem sometimes is some of us tend to think that, let's conduct a Facebook poll, you know, or let's use a text poll. In those cases, you're not actually able to calculate the probability of sample selection, because the samples self-select. So there's what's known as self-selection biases. So for instance, if I have all my Facebook friends as being very pro Manny Pacquiao, so if I ask people, who will you vote for? Then naturally, I might even get 100% voting for Manny Pacquiao, you know. So, but that doesn't necessarily mean that entire sample will represent the entire country, because I have not necessarily chosen my samples with probability relative to the larger population.
That's another very important point that you mentioned, Skip. I was supposed to ask you that later on. Pero sige, pag-usapan na natin yan. The basic problem with internet surveys, with digital surveys, for instance, Facebook surveys, the sample size or the samples themselves are not representative of the entire population. Basically, that's one issue. So in this case, how then should people treat those kinds of surveys? Even yung surveys conducted on radio, di ba yung callers, sasabihin, sinong susuportahan yung presidential candidate? But sometimes with the way these are reported in the media, with the way these are presented on social media, somehow people don't really necessarily ask about the methodology, the sample size, for instance, the selection of the samples. So, liwanagin natin dun sa mga nanonood at sa mga makakapanood dito on social media later on, how should such kinds of surveys, quote-unquote, be treated?
Well, kung yung mga survey na hindi sa probability sample nga na tinatawag natin, yung mga internet, kung pupunta ka lang sa kalye at magtatanong ka, sino iboboto mo? Kahit na 10,000 man na katao ang tatanungin mo, yan ay hindi necessarily na kakatawanin ang buong populasyon ng mga botante. Kaya importante, pag nagkaroon ka ng resulta doon ng mga survey na yan, maganda lang makita na yan ay nagre-reflect lang ng mga kung sino ang bumoto doon, no? Hindi necessarily yan ay makaka-representa sa buong populasyon ng mga botante sa Mayo 2022.
Kaya this be simplified this way, for instance, a Facebook survey. Gagamitin mo emoticons to represent a particular preference for a presidential candidate. The basic deduction of that is that ito yung resulta ng survey base ron sa mga sumali na Facebook users at kasama dito, let's say, within my sphere.
Yung mga sumali lang, paano yung mga hindi sumali? So, kaya ang problema mo nga nun, hindi natin bibigyan ng pagkakataon, lalo na kunwari yung mga taong, kunwari lang, yung walang Facebook. kung wala silang Facebook, sino ngayon ang kakatawan sa kanila? Kasi alalahanin natin sa Pilipinas na kahit na lumalaki ang dami ng gumagamit ng Facebook, hindi pa rin lahat ng botante ay gumagamit ng Facebook. Hindi lahat ng tao ay may access sa internet. So, yun yung naging problema natin. Even kung rin sa radyo, no? Yung tumawag kayo, ganyan-ganyan, hindi lahat naman ng tao ay nakikinig dun sa radyo na yun, no? So, ang problema mo, hindi mo ma-estima sa mga hindi nagpa-participa dun sa survey na yun. So, kaya importanteng-importante na ang survey ay nare-representa niya ang kabuuan ng gusto mong i-describe, no? Katulad nga sa isang, kapag ang tina-target natin ay voting population, if we're trying to target the voting population, it is going to be crucial that you design your survey so that it has, well, it's a probability survey. Otherwise, it will just be nice to know, but it will not really represent anything.
Oo. Purely for entertainment, siguro, or to make certain people feel better. Now, that's the first part, selection of the respondents. Number two, the implementation. Let's say, probability sample ang ginawa. Paano naman yung proper implementation of the survey itself, the fieldwork?
Okay, yeah. Ang ginagawa kasi ng mga opinion polls, parang ginagaya nila yung mga ginagawa ng NSOs. At saka yung, dati kasi, no, ang NSO, mga statistics offices like the Philippine Statistics Authority, meron siyang tinatawag na two-stage design, no? Una, hahanapin muna yung barangays. Imagine mo lang, may listahan ka ng lahat ng barangay sa Pilipinas. Tapos magra-random selection ka. Sabihin mo, 10 barangay lang ang pipiliin ko sa buong Pilipinas. Tapos mula dun sa 10 barangay, magkukuha ka na naman ng random set of people within the barangay, no? Yun yung second stage. So ganun ang paraan, at this is ang pagkaka-design nito is parang mirrored yan sa agricultural surveys. Dati pag tinitingnan natin yung mga farms, no? Gusto natin makita yung gumamit dito ng fertilizer, dito naman hindi tayo gumamit ng fertilizer. Tapos gusto natin makita kung ano yung effect ng fertilizer. So ang ginagawa dati sa mga agricultural survey, nagra-random selection din sila ng two-stage. So plots ang i-divide yung farm into plots. And then the plots, ano na naman, hahanap ka na sa na area, no? So ganun din sa mga NSOs, barangays muna, villages ang sineselect randomly. And then mula dun sa villages na select, saka naman maghahanap ng mga households muna o di kaya mismo mga tao. So ganun din yung mga opinion polls. Yung opinion polls naman, imaginein mo yung buong Pilipinas na may voting precincts yan, no? Throughout the country, may mga dots ka. Randomly select those areas, a few of them, let's say, sabi natin 20, no? 20 or 200. Tapos within the 200 na samples mo, saka kayo mag-select ng 10 kada 200 areas.
Okay. Now, then probability surveys, so yung legitimate surveys for pre-election surveys, for instance, can they be manipulated or at least influenced? For instance, let's say ako yung kandidato, medyo feeling ko mababa ako sa isang region, pwede ko bang hulaan kung kailan yung fieldwork, tapos bobombahin ko ng advertisements on radio, local radio in that particular region, so that when the fieldwork comes, my image would still be fresh in the minds of those people who might be included in the survey.
Definitely. I mean, ang surveys naman are not foolproof, no? I mean, ang tao manipulate mo yan into thinking about you, no? So kaya nga minsan nagkakaroon sila ng campaign sorti, o minsan directly sabihin nila na, o sige, mukhang pupunta sila doon, o sige, ano tayo, doon muna tayo, no? Lalo na yung mga vote rich areas, kasi yun yung tendency rin, ang selection ng barangays doon sa mga kung saan mga areas na mas marami ang mas malalaking population, ang tendency doon din nagse-select, mas malaki ang chance na ma-select yung mga barangays o yung mga areas na yon, no? So minsan talagang deliberately, no, na magka-campaign sorti ka sa mga areas na no? Mamimigay ka ng kung ano man, o ngayon na bagyo kung saan sa Mindanao pupuntahan mo, or sa Visayas, para lang mapakita mo na, oh, I care for you, you know. That's the campaign strategy, and indeed it can necessarily influence, but to what extent it influences, I mean, it's all like speculation, but we in theory it.
Okay. Are surveys predictive? Or do they actually forecast?
Yeah. If we think, kasi I've examined all of these, well, particularly sa Pulse Asia and SWS results over the years, no? I've examined the voting preferences. Nagbabago, no? Month by month up to the last month of before the elections.
We're talking about the function of surveys and how they should be regarded, because you don't want people to unnecessarily make certain assumptions as to the functions of surveys. Number one, are they really predictive, and do they basically forecast outcomes, let's say during elections?
Yeah. The thing is, like, even if surveys themselves are giving a cross section picture, it appears that, at least based on what I've seen from the performance of SWS and Pulse Asia, that they can be very good ways of predicting what's happening at least a month before the actual election. So the closer the survey is to the actual election date, the better the forecast.
Okay. How about the idea that they could create a bandwagon effect? Do surveys really do this or have this effect?
Well, again, that has been an assumption made, but in practice, the survey literature examining not just SWS but throughout the world, when it comes to all of these polls, the bandwagon effect, there might be some evidence, but it's not very strong. It's not so. In other words, what really affects the people's attitudes are not surveys themselves, but the campaign strategies. So, of course, the survey results can input into the campaign strategy, but in practice, it is actually the campaign strategy, not the survey result, that directly affects the whatever changes there might be in voting preferences.
Okay, in short, if someone, let's say, prefers a candidate for president, but based on the surveys, that particular candidate do not necessarily rank even credibly or even has a credible chance of making it, so he doesn't have to give up on that particular candidate and think na matatalo naman niya, doon ako sa medyo kaya manalo.
Possibly may konti, no? I mean, there might be a few people who might get influenced, but in general, people don't get affected by surveys. That's what the literature says.
Okay. Dr. Jose Ramon Albert, thank you very much for joining us tonight on the program, and Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Merry Christmas, Christian.
So that's it for tonight. This has been your host, Christian Esguera. You can watch this episode again on iWantPFC or listen to our podcast on Spotify. Now for recaps and other exclusive content, subscribe to the ANC YouTube channel and catch up with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you again tomorrow, After the Fact.